I sense an essence on the South Seas Crescent Island. Find a way there from the town's coast. This is Legendary Adventures, a Legend of Zelda playthrough podcast. This week we're headed to the Moonlit Grotto on Crescent Island. But first, we'll need to find some special rope, go rafting, and track down some thieves. To the southeast of the Black Tower against the coast, there sits a shack near the shore. The waves lap the shore just mere feet from its doors. Inside, we meet Rafton. He dreams of setting sail on the sea on fine rafts. He has most of the material to make his raft spread across the floor, but he's missing one key piece, a rope that won't decay in water. He tells us a man named Cheval to the east is working on such a rope, but it's not done yet. We cross the river and follow the coast to the east. Just a few screens over, we use Rock's Feather to jump over a second river to reach Cheval's home. He tells us that he's working on both flippers and a rope that won't decay. He hopes to complete them before he dies, but it's clear that he won't be done anytime soon. The moment we exit Cheval's home, Ralph appears. He remembers seeing the name Cheval on a headstone in Yol Graveyard, clearly pointing us to our next destination. As we start to search the graveyard for Cheval's grave, we come across an unusual sight. A large blue bear with wings. Three ghosts have it surrounded and scared stiff. The ghosts notice Link and plan to scare him too. We have to destroy all three ghosts to save the bear. It introduces itself as Moosh. He offers to give Link a ride as a thank you. Thanks to his wings, Moosh can fly over holes. The perfect place to use this ability is in the northwest corner of the graveyard. We can fly over a series of three holes that are arranged in a way that make it impossible to jump over them with our current equipment. Once we're over the holes, we can push Cheval's grave up and reveal a staircase. We descend the stairs into Cheval's grave. We find that it is flooded. We use Rock's Feather to venture further into the grave. A sign left by Cheval tells us that his treasure has been left to one who has both might and light feet. We use the power bracelet to pull a lever to open a pair of blocks to reach the flippers. With the flippers, we can swim through water that's too deep to stand in and reach the Cheval rope. Before heading back to Rafton, I decided to pay a visit to Blossom and Bippin in Linna City. They are distressed. Their baby, who we named Stem, is sick. They can't afford the medicine. Blossom asks if we can spare any money to help them get medicine. We say yes, of course. We are given four options for just how much to donate. 150, 50, 10, or 1 rupee. I chose 150. Blossom thanks us for being a true Samaritan. Returning to the pass, we give the rope to Rafton, but he says we need a chart before we can set sail. I wasn't sure where to find this chart, and I was expecting to wander around for a bit, but I didn't have to. The moment I left Rafton's shack, Ralph appeared. This guy really wants to be sure that we don't get lost. He seems to think that Link is just dawdling about while he's doing all the real work. Ralph tells us that weird guy has a chart. The weird guy is Tingle, of course. He has a strong association with maps after Majora's Mask, and he's known to be a real weirdo because he believes he's a fairy. I suppose some people might still not be entirely sure where to go, but I had already seen Tingle earlier while poking around in the present. He's located on top of a hill that's in the same location as Cheval's house in the past. The thing is, while I had seen Tingle, I wasn't sure how to reach him. There is a cave that is obviously the way up to the top of the hill, but we can't travel through it with our current equipment. There's a gap that we just can't cross. I wasn't entirely sure how I could reach Tingle, but then I ran into a second animal buddy, Ricky the kangaroo. He tells us he lost his gloves, and that he last saw them on the beach. Heading down to the shore, which isn't all that beachy, I dug near a tree to find the gloves. Heading back to Ricky, he's happy that Link found his gloves and offers to give him a ride in his pouch. It's interesting to note that Ricky will only travel in the direction toward Tingle. If we try to go any other direction, he stops and asks, "Isn't what you're looking for over there?" Ricky has the ability to jump up sheer walls and over holes. With his abilities, we can jump to the top of the hill. Once we're at the top, we can jump out of Ricky's pouch and then use Rock's Feather to jump up and cut Tingle's balloon. Once Tingle is on the ground, he notes Link's clothes and assumes that he is a fairy. Tingle, of course, believes himself to be a fairy. He asks Link to be his friend and gives him the chart to the secret island as a sign of their friendship. Ricky says he can't stand Tingle and takes off. With the chart, we can set sail. We return to Rafton and finally obtain a raft. As we set out on the raft, we'll notice that there are whirlpools and rocks which limit the direction we can travel. On this limited path, we first head south. A pirate ship can be seen sailing just on the other side of the whirlpools, but we can't reach it now. We then turn and head north, only to be hit by a massive storm. It's a bit like Link's Awakening, but there's also a nod to the movie Twister. At least it reminds me of it. There are monkeys which go flying through the air as the intense wind blows. Yeah, monkeys aren't cows, but the airborne animals in a storm seem very Twister. Link's raft is struck by lightning and he washes up on the shore of Crescent Island. Very Link's Awakening. Luckily, this island is our goal. Crescent Island is roughly square-shaped. It has a raised area in the center that is shaped like a crescent, hence the name. Unfortunately, the locals, a group of lizard men known as Tokei, have taken a liking to Link's stuff. 5 Tokei make off with Link's equipment and then scatter across the island. This is the first time in the Zelda series players are forced to start over naked. It's not something that happens in every Zelda game, but it seems to happen mostly in games directed by Hidemaru Fujibayashi, as Oracle of Ages is. In fact, in a 2017 interview with Games Radar, series producer Eiji Onuma called it a trademark of Fujibayashi's. He said, "The Legend of Zelda Oracle of Ages and its sister game Oracle of Seasons, which both came out in 2001, were the first Zelda titles that Fujibayashi directed. Partway through Oracle of Ages, Link is shipwrecked, and his items are scattered all across Crescent Island. Skyward Sword was the first home console Zelda Fujibayashi directed, and during that game, Bokoblins steal all of Link's gear and lock him up after he's knocked out by a volcanic eruption. Then Breath of the Wild's Eventide Island unexpectedly removes all of the player's items, even his clothes, as a test of raw strength and survival skills." Tears of the Kingdom wasn't mentioned there, obviously, in that interview because it happened years before its release. But it too features moments where Link is stripped of his equipment, most notably in the Proving Grounds shrines. In the interview, Aonuma concluded by saying, "Taking the player back to nothing helps them appreciate the game's systems in a new way, and enjoy all the power they have once they get their stuff back. If starting over naked really does become Fujibayashi's enduring Zelda legacy, I think it'll be a good one. So let's get back to getting Link's gear so that we can feel powerful again." To get our equipment back, we must figure out how to reach each Tokei holding one of Link's items and then talk to them. It's kind of an adventure game style puzzle involving navigation and trading. The shovel is the easiest to reach. We head south from where we started and follow the shore to find a Tokei with the shovel. It will return the shovel when we speak to it. In a cave to the north, we push a rock and dig a path to reach a Tokei with the sword. With sword in hand, we can travel to the opposite side of the island. There are a couple of buildings on the right side of the island, including a shop. The shop owner has the power bracelet and Rock's feather. It wants seeds as currency, or it will trade for the shovel. We need the mystery seeds for Rock's feather and scent seeds for the bracelet. We haven't come across scent seeds yet, so we will need to find them on this island. We trade our shovel for the bracelet. With it, we can access a staircase on the east side of the raised crescent in the center of the island, and descend the staircase to a cave. Exiting the cave on the other side, we can find the bombs. With the bombs, we can open a cave just south of the shop. Inside is a Tokei with a scent seed tree seedling. It's the prize for completing a minigame. It's called Wild Tokei. There are paths on either side of the room. Once the game starts, Tokei will move down these paths. We need to throw each of them a hunk of meat. If we miss even a single throw, the game is lost. It took me many tries to complete. I eventually figured out the trick was just to stay at the center of the room and turn left and right and throw. On the northeastern side of the crescent, behind a line of stones, we find a Tokei who says the area is a tree nursery. We can plant the seedling there, but we are told it will take hundreds of years to grow. We need to find the harp. We return to the shop and trade back for our shovel, then trade the shovel for Rock's feather. We use the feather inside a cave on the west center part of the island to jump over some water to find the flippers. With the flippers, we can trade back again for the bracelet, and then make our way through the cave on the southwestern side of the crescent, to find the seed's satchel. We can then buy back the feather and use Rock's feather and the bracelets together to take an alternate path through that cave on the southwest side of the crescent to find the harp. With the harp, we can travel to the present to collect the scent seeds from the tree that we planted, then return to the pass and trade back for our shovel, then buy the bracelet back. We have all of our items back! Well, except the shield wasn't included. What's up with that? There is a Deku scrub who sells shields for 50 rupees. I bought one, but I wasn't happy about it. We can then return to the present to reach the dungeon. Along the way, I made a stop in a house on the southeastern corner of the island, and I stumbled into a trade. A Tokei inside says it's cooking, but it's having a hard time because its nose is stuffed up. We give him the bag of stink, which clears his nose. It gives us a hunk of tasty meat in return. The dungeon is on the west side of the island. The entrance is a large stone head. There is a Tokei that mentions a Tokei without a tail, or Link, opened the mouth of the guardian in the past. I thought I might have to do a little time travel to get inside, but no, it's open and we can walk right in. The dungeon is Moonlit Grotto. It spans two floors, a ground level floor and a basement level. They are shaped like crescent moons, and the shapes mirror each other. They're very similar in shape to level 2, the moon from the original Legend of Zelda. The main difference is that there are two extra rooms on the right side that give this dungeon a more curved appearance. In terms of music, this dungeon features the longest and most complex theme out of any of the dungeons we've seen so far. It's kind of rocking, starting with deep notes and a bouncing bass line. The melody then moves to the higher notes. The whole tune plays out in about 24 seconds before looping again. The dungeon map is found in a room just left of the entrance. We must defeat two Pole's voice enemies to make a chest with the map appear. These rabbit-like enemies first appeared in the original Legend of Zelda, and again in Link's Awakening. In Link's Awakening, we generally defeated them by hitting them with a pot. There weren't any pots in this room, so I ended up defeating them with bombs. I later found out that I could have used the harp. That's a nod to the original Japanese version of the first game. In that version, players could defeat Pole's voice by making sound into a microphone on the second player controller. Their weakness was changed to arrows for versions outside of Japan. This dungeon introduces a turnstile obstacle. It's located two rooms north and one room east of the entrance. The turnstile is kind of a high-tech version of the five-block layout that we've seen in A Link to the Past's Ice Palace and Link's Awakening's Catfish's Maw. We also saw a similar block obstacle in Spirit's Grave as well. The turnstile limits the direction players can travel. We must pass through from the correct direction to go the way we want to go. The turnstile uses color and some arrows to indicate the direction Link will travel when he enters. When the turnstile is blue, it will send Link to the right. When it is orange, it will send him to the left. The main gimmick of this dungeon is sort of an echo of Eagle's Tower from Link's Awakening. We must destroy four crystals spread across the first floor in order to drop the turnstile to the basement level. Each crystal we need to destroy is located in rooms bordering the turnstile room, one in each cardinal direction from the turnstile. The dungeon is roughly split into two distinct sections, the before the drop section and the after the drop section. The before the drop section is primarily played out on the first floor. I say primarily because we do have to venture into the basement for a bit, but we will only go through about four rooms on the basement level before the drop. We can destroy the south, west, and east crystals with the equipment that we have when we walked into the dungeon. The fourth crystal requires the dungeon item. It's located in the top point of the crescent, on the first floor. It's the Seed Shooter. This is a new item to the series. It replaces the bow and arrow from previous games. True to its name, it shoots seeds. When we draw it, we can aim our shot in any of the eight directions around Link. Seeds fired from the shooter pull from the same stock of seeds that we have in our satchel. The seeds bounce off walls when fired. Some seeds will have special effects when used. For example, ember seeds can still be used to start fires, while seeds like scent seeds seem to behave just like projectiles when shot. The dungeon does a good job of introducing this item, then stepping up the complexity of the puzzles centered around it. We first use the seed shooter to destroy the final crystal. It's just a case of point and shoot. The turnstile falls, leaving behind a treasure chest with a Gasha seed inside. On the basement level, we have to use the seed shooter to bounce seeds to hit a switch and extend bridges. There's a barrier we rotate by hitting a crystal switch, and then bounce the seed off the barrier to hit the switch. On a second, more interesting version of the puzzle, we step on a floor switch to open and rotate a barrier. We must stay standing on the floor switch and then bounce the seed off the wall and through the barrier to hit our target switch. We have to solve this puzzle in order to reach the boss key. A small key is needed to reach the boss door, and we need to face the mini boss of the dungeon to get that small key. It's a giant mole. We have to dig the mole out of the ground and then land hits with the sword to win. The boss is the Shadow Hag. She turns into four shadows and slides across the floor. We have to avoid touching these shadows to avoid taking damage. She will also occasionally release moth enemies into the room. Destroying these enemies can help us restock on items if needed. Occasionally, the hag emerges from the floor to attack Link. The thing is, she will disappear if we turn to face her, so we must bounce seeds off the wall with the seed shooter to land hits. I wasn't very good at dodging the shadows. I did, however, manage to claim victory by just the skin of my teeth. When the hag falls, we can collect a heart container and claim the third essence. It's the Echoing Howl. We are told this essence echoes far across the plains to speak to insolent hearts. After getting the essence, we are given an ominous vision. Queen Ambi and Nehru stand together in the castle courtyard. The Black Tower will soon be complete. It rises nearly to the sky. Ambi says once it's finished, she will be remembered as the greatest of all queens. The Maku Tree warns Link that terrible things will happen if the Black Tower is completed. She points Link to the mountains west of Linna City. We'll head there next week. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Next week we're meeting our third animal buddy and then picking one of those bunnies to call upon at any time. We'll also visit Symmetry City and the Skull Dungeon. If you want to follow along, please subscribe. And thanks again to everyone who has subscribed already. I really do appreciate it. I am Paul Riley, and I will see you next week.